You know, I mean, papers are lucky enough to get a great reporter who's going to dig it and can tell it really well. But Juan was an incredible organizer, is an incredible organizer. When he says that those 5 months are traumatic, it doesn't begin to talk about it. But Juan never broke a sweat. You know, I mean, that was a remarkable thing. The newspaper guild was in total chaos at the time we went out. And Juan led us together.
I want to thank you, Tom Robbins, for joining us. And Juan, congratulations on all that you have accomplished. You may have left that New York Daily News, but I'm really thankful that you're staying with your other DN. That's right, with Democracy Now! And that does it for the show. Juan Gonzalez, read all of his books. News for All the People, Harvest of Empire, A History of Latinos America, Roll Down Your Window, Stories of a Forgotten America. I'll be speaking in Spokane, Washington, and then on to Olympia in Seattle. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thank you so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Roland and a mystery guest. I think they'll talk about the climate. But first, these announcements.
On Monday, May 9th at 6:30 p.m., Prison Pipeline will be hosting a Mother's Day special. Host Amy Johnson will be speaking with her mother, who knows intimately the pain of having a son incarcerated. They will discuss the effect this incarceration of over 7 years has had on the mother and their family. Join us for this heartfelt mother-daughter interview on Monday, May 9th at 6:30 p.m. It was a halo friend. Sit down from heaven, let us greet
it here, a mother's smile. KBOO Community Radio is the proud co-sponsor of the World Beat PDX monthly series featuring Wamba on Thursday, May 12th at the Analog Cafe in Portland. Wamba plays percussive jazz and funk with a strong World Beat influence and will be playing two sets that evening. Again, that's Wamba on Thursday, May 12th at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S. made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
Climate changed me when I lost my only job. Climate changed me when my mom began to sob. Climate changed me when the storm tore off the roof. Climate changed me when the sky told me the truth. Well, I always knew that I would have to change. But do I have to die to change, change, change? Climate changed you.
Climate changed you.
When the flash flood makes you scream. Climate changed you.
Climate changed you.
When the drought dries up your dreams. Climate changed you.
Climate changed you.
With three cousins underground. Climate changed you.
Climate changed you.
When the springtime made no sound. Well, I always knew
climate changed us.
Climate changed us.
When the sunshine hates our skin.
Yes, sirree. Climate change blues, Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir, hot off the presses CD, handed me on May Day, The Earth Wants You. Check it out. www.stopshopping, I believe, is the, I'll find that. Anyway, my name is Paul Rowland. Good morning. This is Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO. Membership drive is over. Hooray. Hooray for membership drive. We did it again. Yes. We did it. And thank all of you who helped us do it. Who did it? You are the ones. And we are going to be talking again about climate change, the burning issue of our times, one of the many. The cumulative effect of all the burning issues of our time in a way. And we have a guest in our studio who we're going to be talking with in a few minutes after I get through with some announcements, as usual. Loewen Berman with Rising Tide, and he's part of the coalition that's putting together this ambitious series of actions coming up in two weekends called Break Free. We're going to be talking all about that and entertaining your phone calls at 503-231-8187. Speaking of which, things are kicking off here in the Pacific Northwest next Thursday, May 12th, when camping begins at Deception Pass. If you haven't yet, make your camping plans. So this Friday, May 6th at 6 p.m., there will be an All Portland Break Free meeting. The program is being put together. You are asked to be there if you plan on participating in Break Free. So that will be at 6 p.m. That's the Sunnyside Environmental School Auditorium, 3421 Southeast Salmon Street here in Portland. And you can RSVP via Action Network. I got this off of Facebook. If you use Facebook, you can find it there. Otherwise, I will attempt to link to it on this program slot after the show on our new website. Okay, Should the World Tree Be Withered? Talk by Stephen Jenkinson this Friday. It's also has something to do with the topic we're going to be talking about. This Friday at Clinton Street Theater at Southeast 26 in Clinton, 7 to 9 p.m. This is an evening for grief and wonder and some prescriptions scribbled in the sand for what a withered world might now ask of younger folk and of older folk. That should be interesting. A Portland premiere of Our Sacred Obligation at the Portland Eco Film Festival this Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard here in Portland. Lummi Nation filmmaker Freddie Lane and master carver Jewel James in person for post-film Q&A. Our Sacred Obligation is a documentary film about the 2014 totem pole journey hosted by the House of Tears Carvers of the Lummi Nation. The 22-day-long journey connected tribal nations and non-Native communities along the proposed coal train path to a Native name I can't pronounce, the ancient Lummi village site and burial ground, and the proposed site for a coal terminal. So that's this 2 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, Our Sacred Obligation. Stop Trump, Shut It Down, Saturday, May 7th at noon, wherever he's going to be speaking in Vancouver. This is an announcement I'm reading from. This is not something I am personally promoting. Reality TV star and national embarrassment Donald Trump is spreading hate across our country in his campaign to become the next president of the United States. Anyway, we're not supposed to take sides, but I am just reading this announcement. This is a news item about the Stop Trump, Shut It Down rally Saturday at 12 p.m. in Vancouver. Saturday, May 7th, Kaya Activist Trainings, two sessions, 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. and 2 to 5:30 p.m. at Cathedral Park Boat Dock. People might remember from the amazing actions last year against the Fenica icebreaker of Shell Oil. This training is open to all. No boat or prior experience needed. Level 1, 2, and 3 are offered concurrently. Learn how to paddle for the first time. Get tips and tricks from fellow kayaktivists. If you already paddle, come practice your safety and rescue skills and help welcome new paddlers. RSVP is required at www.backbonecampaign.org/May7PDX10AM. Again, that's on Facebook. I'm sure you can find that. So, also, action role trainings to prepare for Break Free Pacific Northwest, Saturday, May 7th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Concordia University in Portland at the George White Library, 2900 Northeast Liberty. Info and RSVP go to 350pdx@gmail.com or 503-705-1943. And there's a number of different trainings to choose from. And there's the final art party, Sunday, 12 to 6 p.m., 3381 Southeast 10th Avenue, painting banners, etc. And again, I'll be at the front desk all morning, so you can just call me there at 503-231-8032. This Sunday at 8:50 a.m., join BARC's volunteer hike leaders, Adi and Lola, on the Clackamas River to see the very rare Iris tenuis in bloom. This hike will be a very easy excursion geared towards kids of all ages. They will be following the Clackamas River Trail, though not the entire length. So you can meet up at the Hollywood Trader Joe's, 4121 Northeast Halsey, at 8:50 a.m. It leaves at 9 a.m. sharp. So check that out. You can call BARC at 503-331-0374 for more details and information. And something very important coming up, which I'm going to be talking about on my show next week. I hope to have the actual Lumad people from a delegation of the Lumad indigenous people from the Philippines. They will be in town next week. There's a whole schedule. May 9th, I believe that's Monday, Land is Life, the Perspective of the Lumads at the Filipino American Center, 8917 Southeast Stark, 7 to 9. The next day, Makibaka Dare to Struggle, the Lumads' Resistance Against Land Displacement at in Vancouver, Washington at St. Luke's Episcopal Church. May 12th, the Lumads from their ancestral land to U.S., Portland State University at Smith Memorial Student Union. And May 14th at SEIU Southeast Portland, 6401 Southeast Foster. Again, I'll attempt to put this up on the website. And you can call me and get all this stuff after this program. So with all that said, I'm sorry, there's one last thing. This Friday, Food and Environmental Justice, Local and Global Movements, 3:30 to 5 p.m. at the PSU Multicultural Center, Smith Memorial Student Union, Suite 228. Learn about how the global agroecological movement relates to local issues and struggles. Participants in this panel will present and dialogue about the food justice and environmental justice movements at international and local levels. Panelists are Nils McCoon of the Via Campesina Central America team, Miguel Robles of the Soil Not Oil Coalition, and Diana Soto, Chihena Apache Mexican from Silver City, New Mexico. That will be happening this Friday at PSU, 3:30 to 5 p.m. With all that said, welcome, Loan.
Thank you.
And good morning. And I guess you've heard all about what's going on at Fort McMurray. It's truly dramatic and somewhat terrifying at this distance. It must be incredibly terrifying to those who are experiencing. Nearly all of the city's 80,000 residents are being evacuated, and that's at the heart of the Canada's oil sands region. There's a massive wildfire that swept just dramatically. I guess it started spreading earlier on Tuesday afternoon. The wildfire jumped a river to spread to the east bank and reached Highway 63, the main artery south, so people can't actually go south, which is where people can flee to, like, population and relatives and stuff, and they're being forced to camp out. I hate to say it, but shape of things to come. And I don't know. I don't want to get too Reverend Billy religious, but it does seem like the kind of thing that he talks about, that the earth is actually speaking to us. Would we but listen? So, what are the responses to these increasingly apocalyptic seeming things that the earth is doing, you know, essentially automatically in response to this massive buildup of gases that has been going on since the Industrial Revolution? I know you're part of Rising Tide. You're part of this Break Free. Tell us about what Break Free is all about.
Well, Break Free is short for Break Free from Fossil Fuels, and it is an international movement for a week and a half of action against fossil fuel targets across the world. It's occurring in 12 or 13 countries and six locations in the U.S. One of the locations is here in the Pacific Northwest, and it is the March Point refineries. That's right across the bay from Anacortes. March Point contains two refineries, one Tesoro, one Shell. And between these two refineries, they produce 47% of the gasoline and diesel consumed in the entire Pacific Northwest. Which is why they've been chosen as a primary target. And what we have going on here is 3 days of action, the 13th, 14th, and 15th of May, coming up very quickly, to not only state that we have to stop new fossil fuel infrastructure, but that we have to begin dismantling the existing infrastructure, such as these two refineries. And the actions will range from permitted legal actions, including a very major action on Saturday, the 14th, all led by indigenous leaders from the tribes in the areas, which will include speakers and music and a rally and ceremonies and a water landing.
Yeah, because they have these traditional canoe journeys, so they're already set up to do this sort of thing. Yeah.
In fact, the intent is that there will be water ceremonies simultaneously all along the mm-hmm. coast. On the other hand, there will also be civil disobedience and direct action aimed at interfering with the throughput of fossil fuels at this, these two refineries.
So not much element of surprise necessarily in all this.
No, perhaps some element of surprise in terms of exactly what direct actions occur. One of the things that's been very critical about the Break Free coalition is working with workers at the plant and working with the indigenous and other local communities, being sure that what we do does not put them at risk. So, for example, the workers have asked that we not interfere with new shifts coming into the refinery, because to do so would put the people working there at risk, working beyond 12-hour shifts trying to maintain a very dangerous facility. And we've agreed that that would be honored.
Well, let me just interrupt you there for a second. I know you got a lot to say there. Do people know of of safety violate, you know, safety difficulties, any issues there have been at those plants? Is that something you can speak to at all? Or?
It's there have been incidents in the past at those plants. I can't speak to them in detail.
Maybe somebody listening in who knows more about that, and when we start accepting calls, can add that. So go on. Sorry.
Yeah. But what I really wanted to talk about is not only Break Free, which is, you know, something that's happening in a couple of weeks, and it's critically important. I should also point out that it's already started yesterday in the UK. 300 nonviolent direct action protesters shut down the largest coal mine in the UK for 24 hours in Wales. And this is part of the Break Free International Coalition. But I wanted to talk more, perhaps more generally, about the whole issue of climate change and associated concerns. It seems to me that there are two truths that I would like folks to accept and base their actions on. One is a truth which is not my truth, which is absolutely scientific fact. It's a truth like gravity is a truth, which is that climate change is an existential threat to life on Earth. This is documented over and over and over again by all areas of the scientific community. And it's happening much more quickly and much more seriously than anyone had predicted. So, for example, if you were reading the BBC or listening to the BBC last week, you learned that NOAA, the National Atmospheric and Oceanic Administration, their latest study has now shown that we can expect a 3-meter sea level rise, that's just under 10 feet, not by 2150, but by 2050. That is, in as early as 34 years, we can see a 10-foot sea level rise. What that means, of course, for example, for the Oregon coast would be devastation, for Florida, but think about Bangladesh, a country of hundreds of millions, which would essentially disappear.
Certainly be difficult to ignore.
And yet, we are doing our best to ignore it. The second truth, though, which is perhaps more controversial, but I think more as clearly true, is that this crisis, this climate crisis, cannot be solved within the context of our current economic and cultural system. Global corporate capitalism and the culture that accompanies it is utterly unable to address this crisis. And I think the proof of that is all around us. I mean, you can listen to the radio, you can read the books, you can watch TV, you can go to the movies, and everything is telling you about this ongoing catastrophic crisis. And yet when you walk out the door, nothing is changing. By contrast, I'm old, by the way. I'm 74 years old. I remember as a child seeing these movie theater newsreels of the World War II mobilizations. You know, here was Pearl Harbor, and within months, not decades, months, the entire economy was transformed. Factories that produced private automobiles were suddenly pouring out by the thousands and tens of thousands, tanks and planes and guns and ammunition and ships. The entire country was mobilized. People were growing in victory gardens and collecting paper. And no one was asking, well, gee, how are we going to pay for that? What's your policy, Senator? It was happening because everybody understood this catastrophic threat.
Well, they also understood that it was good for business.
It got us
out of the depression.
Yes. Well, we have a comparable threat, maybe a greater threat, and yet nothing is happening. There's been a lot of talk lately about how wonderful it is that we're signing the Paris agreements. Paris was not a great example of response. It was a great example of failure to respond. If all of the agreements in Paris were honored, which is highly unlikely since they're all voluntary and there is no enforcement, and we know that our country is not about to honor these commitments, if all of them were agreed to or met, we would still see a 3.5-degree rise in average temperatures. That's Celsius, when the limit that we can tolerate is 1.5 degrees. So what we know is that this, and all of the commitments are for the future. Nothing's going to happen right away, whereas everything has to happen right away if we really want to meet this crisis.
Well, you know, if you listen to NPR, you'd think that the one person who actually does seem to be talking about this and what seems to be a somewhat realistic way, Bernie Sanders, doesn't seem like he's in the race anymore, if you listen to NPR, and not to mention the other major networks. It's Trump and Hillary, Trump and Hillary.
Yeah.
It almost seems like, I don't know, almost seems like it's true what people say about National Petroleum Radio.
Well, I think the thing is that we have to go much deeper than even the electoral process. We have an economic system that is based upon its underlying DNA is greed, corruption, inequality, and insecurity, fear, and the total discounting and ignoring of the natural world. In order for us to respond to this crisis, we would need an economic system and a culture based on cooperation, on community, on equality, on compassion, on long-term considerations, and a profound focus on the natural world.
You know what the problem is, though, is we got this system that's standing in our way.
Absolutely. It is completely blocking us. I mean, there are thousands. It's not as though there's a simple blueprint towards this new utopia I'm talking about. But there are thousands and thousands of people around the world with good ideas and good programs and good proposals for moving in that direction. And yet we can't. We can't move because the system is stopping us. Speaking of stopping, if we were being rational, if we were acting in a way that based on the interests of the people and non-human people of the world, we would immediately stop what we're doing. We would stop producing gas-guzzling cars. We would stop building new infrastructure. We would stop a new fossil fuel infrastructure. We would stop, drilling for new sources of oil. But we're not. We're going on as though it's just business as usual, which I think is the proof of the inability of the system. And it's not because there are evil people, at the heads of these corporations. It's because everyone in these corporations is trapped in the logic of the system that says, if I'm going to survive, I've got to compete and grow and ignore the natural world and worry about this quarter's bottom line. And until we can understand that we have to change the system profoundly and the culture behind it, we are doomed. And so, yes, we have to continue fighting against all of the evils that the system produces, whether it's Black Lives Matter or immigrant rights or climate change. These are all symptoms of a system that has to be changed.
Right on, I agree. And we'll get into more of that. And we invite your calls at 503-231-8187. And I think the question that was asked by the Stop Shopping Choir in the song that started out this program, "Do We Have to Die to Change?" puts it rather starkly, because in a way we are asked, actually, you know, those of us even who think that we already think the right thoughts and to some extent do the right things, we are also conditioned and trapped in the system, and we can't do it alone. So we need to find people to talk about this stuff with. We need to find people to do things with, like, you know, find your own Stop Shopping Choir, or, you know, getting involved with direct action campaigns. You know, that Chiactivist moment last summer was, people felt really energized and it made new connections. And, you know, but that has to be followed up on. So people have to connect and then continue to do things together. And so that's some thoughts I have. If you have thoughts, please share them with us. We have one person, Sunny, on the line. Go ahead, Sunny.
Thank you. What a good show, always. What an important show. I mean, addressing reality, and It's a pressing reality. I just have some fast thoughts. They're doing a sweep of the people along the spring water corridor, and they can push those people off, and they will return, and there will be greater and greater numbers. And if someone could go out there in a kindly, non-condescending way and assist people who want to form little nations. You might have a I want to party all night nation, and we're kind of rowdy over here, and that's the way we live, and here's our little Bill of Rights and Constitution, and over here we have the peaceables, the safety women. That would help bring a little structure, and what we have to do is get that cohesive structure going, even in all communities. Start forming nations of shared values, shared effort, sharing, caring, closeness, because we're going to need everybody in this, and everybody needs help. The last thing I was going to say is Obama is coming to Flint, Michigan shortly, because an eight-year-old wrote him a letter. And the governor or whatever is saying, and when you get there, Obama, drink the water. Prove to these people that the water is okay. Well, the fact of the matter is the people have been handed out filters by the CDC. They're not taking in giant volumes of bottled water anymore because they're being so indoctrinated that the water is fine. It's fine now. Just put those filters on, and they're showering under this water also. That I ask the KABU listening audience, I'm sure that there are many people that know how to put together a good sauna, a good sweat lodge. Go over to Flint, Michigan, and help people set those up in their backyard so that they can at least bathe without being under that contaminating lead water.
Okay.
You know, so I hope I would do it myself. I don't know how to do it. I'm half Indian, but I don't even know how to do that yet. And I can't do it. I have family commitments, but there might be some good hearts that can get over there. All right. And that would do a nice thing. Thank you. That's okay. All I have to say.
Thanks, Sunny. Bye-bye. All right. And we have another caller, Tim. Let's go to Tim right away. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, good morning. I just dropped into coverage and was able to hear this. I'm not sure who your guest is, but I've been hearing many of the same kinds of thoughts expressed across the gamut of places I hear information. The idea that things don't change because we don't view them globally. We don't see them as a whole thing. Very, very briefly, I don't know that this is any different than trying to understand a religious point of view. You can't try to change or yourself with pursuing one aspect of religion. So the analogy would be, we have Black Lives Matter, for example, we have climate change, we have human trafficking, we have remaining still even acid rain issues. You cannot address the entire issue by addressing one thing at a time. And I feel very, very profoundly that we have to be able to evolve as a species. I know that sounds kind of new agey and crazy, but we have within our hands the ability to do that. And the only way we are going to change these kinds of things, as you referenced, the Paris talks, those were a disaster. And we have to somehow change the way we as a species think of our lives on this planet. And I still have some ideas in my mind about how to do that, but I'd be very interested in hearing voices from someplace else. How do we begin to essentially evolve the way we think as a species on this planet to survive? Because we have more than one issue that is very, very pressing. There's several of them that could be catastrophic.
Indeed.
And I'd like to hear some response to that.
Well, one thing I would say, which I think is important, is that what we see around us is not in our DNA. That is, there have been other cultures, there have been other ways of living on the earth that are profoundly different from the way we live. I would recommend a book, Braiding Sweetgrass, by a indigenous woman who is a traditionalist and also a professor with a PhD in botany. And if you listen to her descriptions of her indigenous culture and her language, the very basis of the language itself that was indigenous to her culture represents a different way of looking at the world. Instead of gendered effects on verbs, for example, distinction was between living and non-living. So infants learning a language are learning a different way of looking at the world. So we have to evolve, but we have examples of other ways of living. And one of the reasons that it's so critical that we work with indigenous communities is not only because in an opportunistic way we share a common interest in blocking coal trains, but because there are different ways to live and different ways to look at the natural world that we can learn from the indigenous cultures. Yes, it's not as quite as dire as we have to completely change humanity. We have to make different choices. And the choice of our economic system and our culture that flows from that economic system is a choice. And there are other models for us to look towards as we try and change our reality to one which is sustainable on this earth.
That's encouraging to hear. How do we do that in the time frame that
that's the trillion-dollar question. And you know, I was joking with Lowen. I mean, I feel like we need a miracle. But you know, like the Grateful Dead sings, you know, I need a miracle every day. We need to create our own miracles. Basically, there is no solution. We have to. I really think direct action and just doing things to break the spell that we all are in on a daily basis. You know, Lowen was saying you walk outside and it's like nothing is changing in response to this, you know, planetary emergency. Reverend Billy gave a really wonderful talk at Powell's Books on Sunday. And it's like, we are in a planetary emergency. Wake up. You know, we have to wake ourselves up. And to wake ourselves up.
But there are so few of us that will do that.
Yes, but no, we have to. But
compared to what something that Donald
Well, sure, of course, okay.
Rally,
sure.
How do we then say, this is something that we have to wake up too many people.
Well, yeah, sure. But we can't say it into existence. Okay, I'll give you my example. Like when I got involved in Earth First in 1986, you know, it's like there was, you know, a few dozen people around the country who were doing the kinds of things that Earth First was doing at the time, which is like, you know, climbing in trees, blockading bulldozers. Within a couple of years, there was hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people engaging in direct action because some people, you know, did the creative, broke out of their own spells, out of their own comfort zones, started doing things, and it was infectious. It was contagious. There is no model. There is no mold. There is no silver bullet. Just do things yourself with other people to break out of your own spell and help other people break out of spells. And who knows? You never know what's going to happen. There's no guarantees.
One of the advantages of being old is that I have seen this happen. I was involved in the civil rights movement. I marched with Dr. King. You know, the civil rights movement, if someone had told you in the 1950s that there was going to be a civil rights revolution in this country and that, you know, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of people would be in the streets demanding equality and justice and freedom, you would have said, ah, come on, you know, that ain't going to happen. It hasn't happened. People don't care. People are cowed. But once you get in a church with, I can tell you, the church just happened to be often the site of mobilization with a multiracial community singing freedom songs and walking out singing We Are Not Afraid in the face of police repression, you begin to create within yourself something that never existed in your life, that has never existed in the society that you grew up in. And I think it's important to see. I saw the same thing happen with the anti-war movement. You know, I helped organize a little group in Chicago around the Vietnam War, Chicago Committee and the War in Vietnam. There were four of us. No one had, people didn't even know what Vietnam was. You know, within a couple of years, again, thousands and tens of thousands of people in the street, the politicians afraid to leave their fortresses because everywhere they went, they found protests.
Well, those are very hopeful things, and I appreciate your experience on that. I look at the Occupy movement, and I feel like somehow culturally we are different, and to get those things off of the ground is much more difficult. It's more difficult to wake people up than it has been in the past. I'm 60, so I have been through some of that. But thank you very much. I appreciate you.
No, and thanks for your call. And, you know, we don't mean to, it's like to diminish anybody's anything. But yeah, I mean, focusing on the difficulties oftentimes prevents us from looking at the possibilities. I mean, I'm certainly, I could be endlessly skeptical and pessimistic facing, you know, the fact that we could see the first completely Arctic, ice-free Arctic ever in what normally would be slowly coming off of the ice age. I mean, we've like put like jet fuel into the atmosphere, into the climate system. It's something unprecedented. As I had, you know, David Ray Griffin on a couple weeks ago, who wrote the book called Unprecedented. There's something happening that is very different, and we have to get up to speed with it, but we also can't let it paralyze us. So that's like, you know, it's a razor's edge we're walking on, you know.
And a good opportunity to get started is to join in the Break Free, the Break Free mobilization. Just get on Google Break Free PDX, and you'll get hooked up to the websites that show you how to register, how to get transportation, how to, you know, what are all the options, housing, lodging, etc. And what's going on. And come to this meeting on Friday, come to the meeting on Saturday, get involved. It's our only hope. It's sure no guarantee of success, but the one guarantee is if we don't do it, we're doomed.
Again, that's this Friday coming up at 6 p.m., and that's going to be at the Sunnyside Environmental School Auditorium at 3421 Southeast Salmon Street in Portland. If you're outside of Portland, you can form your own affinity groups and stay in touch with the network and show up there. There's a website for Break Free in general that can lead you to how to get involved if you're not in the Portland area. So that's a good place to answer any questions people have about Break Free, build relationships amongst people who plan to attend. If you're not in an affinity group, maybe to find an affinity group or a working group, that sort of thing. If you haven't participated in, you know, a civil disobedience or large-scale action, you can find out what all is entailed, legal risks, all that sort of thing. And you can also come to a training on Saturday, this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Concordia University at the George White Library. That's at 2900 Northeast Liberty. And there's various trainings, Know Your Rights from the Civil Liberties Defense Center, How to Be a Legal Observer, Peacekeeping Skills, Action Reporting via Social Media, Action Photography, Arrestee Jail Support, Role of Police Liaison, and others. There's so many different roles. You can perhaps even create your own role. Hopefully people are flexible on those scores. There's also going to be an art party if you're artistically inclined, Sunday, 12 to 6 p.m. at 3381 Southeast 10th Avenue, to paint banners, make puppets, and all sorts of things like that. And there's kayaktivist trainings on Saturday at Cathedral Park Boat Dock, two sessions, one 10 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. and one 2 to 5:30 p.m. RSVP at www.backbonecampaign.org, and then you'll be directed to wherever it is that you go to, May 7, PDX, etc. It's open to all with a prior experience or not.
Yeah, one thing this last caller brought up again, and also the previous caller, about compassion and response to this crisis, and the contrast between the system that we live under and kind of the humanity that we all share. Last night I was at a presentation by a couple of rising tiders who had gone to Lesbos to work with the migrants arriving. And they talked about the contrast between the official government responses, which are to, you know, do everything possible to make it as difficult as possible for the migrants, and the outpouring by thousands and thousands of people across Europe to welcome the migrants into their homes and into their communities, and to drop what they're doing and run to aid. We have to focus on that aspect of us, which is our compassion and our concern and our belief in the equality of human and non-human creatures, and reject a system which is inhuman, and which is actually in a profound way in opposition to life itself.
And we have another caller, John. You're on the air.
Hi there. I know I don't have a lot of time, but you guys could do a 24-hour talk show on this subject.
Easily.
I was going to bring up NPR, too. I heard, sometime last summer, one afternoon, I think they reported it twice, a huge methane release off the coast of Washington was spotted. And then I heard, I've never heard one more word about it ever since. And it was like a huge, surprising amount of methane came off the floor of the ocean off the Washington coast. Anybody heard about that?
I do remember hearing something about that. I think I may have mentioned it, probably also my fault for not following up. There's so many things. You know, I covered that artificial methane burst that happened down in Southern California for months there, the geyser that, you know, it's bad enough that methane is naturally being released because of rising air and sea temperatures from both the permafrost and the seabed, which is what you're referring to. But we also seem to be helping it along, the process, by releasing massive amounts of methane from fracked gas sites and elsewhere. But yeah, the methane situation is the monster awakening, the slumbering beast, which is awakening. That's just the beginning of it. There's so much methane locked in tundra and permafrost and in various parts of seabeds all around the globe that it's
like every few months I hear reports of things are coming faster than they thought, so that it may be very soon that methane begins to really cut loose.
It's true, and that's one of the many specters that are, you know, driving the sense of urgency that, you know, I mean, we should have had this sense of urgency, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. You know, we could play that game all we want, but here we are.
You know, one of the most interesting interesting quotes out of the gospel is when Jesus says, the days will have to be shortened or no life will survive. So, you know, what he's doing right there is predicting a repeat of, the widespread flood story from cultures around the world have described a flood story. It's even on petroglyph, ancient megalith carvings. But what Jesus is doing there is predicting what Yogananda from India called a partial dissolution of the world. So and Yogananda says we've had several in the past and we'll have several in the future, where humanity has to be cut back because they're getting too out of balance. Just like the individual gets too out of balance and his life is shortened, civilizations get cut back. Well, on that note.
I would just like sort of continue that thought by just saying, and you know, Loan can chime in here, but I would beware a little bit on this sort of generic, like, cutting back humans, because unfortunately, the people who are impacted are you know, the island cultures, most, you know, first and foremost in the, you know, places like Bangladesh that are already suffering terribly by this world global system. And unfortunately, I don't know if we will be able to actually cut back what needs to be cut back, which is, you know, the top of the pyramid. The
universe slowed us down in the past, according to these people like Yogananda. The universe steps in, and so, you know, what do the Native Americans call it? What's the term? But they predict a time of difficulty coming.
I think the point that Paul was making, which is critical for us to always keep in the forefront, is that those who are paying the highest price from climate change are those who have had the least to do with creating it. And one of the reasons why we're not responding, one of the reasons why at the Paris talks, all of the demands of the indigenous people who came were ignored, is because the power relations in the world are such that the folks who, again, are suffering the most and will continue to suffer the most are those who are least responsible, while those who are most responsible are, to the greatest extent possible, insulated from the effects of climate change.
Back to that controlled media problem. If the media was really doing a consistent job, we'd have a different world.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, and we say this endlessly on KBOO, and our guests on KBOO endlessly say this, and it doesn't make it less true, but it doesn't necessarily shake us out of our lethargy, our what seems to be a malaise or a paralysis. You know, the media are, of course, part of this economic system. And places like KBOO are few and far between, which is the point an earlier caller was making, which is the frustration we all feel that, you know, there's not that enough of us that are, you know, waking up to these facts and, you know, trying to get activated. But that's, you know, you got to start where you got to start. And it's those are point, you know, the points you're making, I think it could be that things are getting to the point, or could get to the point, where it's out of our hands anymore. And yeah, the universe or the earth is going to act how it's going to act. I mean, whether it's a conscious thing, whether, you know, the Gaia hypothesis extends to like a conscious living, not just a living planet, but a consciously living planet, those I'll leave to another day. But, you know, the fact is the cumulative impacts that we're having on the biosphere is creating these massive perturbations of global climatic and other and oceanic and wind systems that are leading to these, you know, I think this year is going to see some incredibly dramatic things. Like I'm kind of stepping out of line, but I really think we're going to see some things that we have not seen on this planet, certainly since human beings have been existent. But we got another caller. So John, I thank you for calling. I wish we could talk with you a little more, but we got Charlie also on the line. Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah,
Yeah, hi. Hey, really appreciate this discussion. It's very complex and wide-ranging. And, you know, the thought that just keeps ringing in my mind over and over and over again, I'm in my 60s, I've seen a lot of life and a lot of human behavior. And I think really the only way out of this mess really is to keep it simple and to act, to stop really talking and start acting. And if we're concerned about saving the planet and life and the diversity of life, I think what we need to do is we need to go out and appreciate the diversity of life. Stake a claim. I've done it on the Sandy River. There's lots of places you can go. Clean it up. Look at it. Get to know it. And you will consider it more and more precious. And everyone you bring there and every story you tell about that will impress on other people how precious it is. And that's what we need to do, is come to a new appreciation of the earth and how precious it is, and the interconnectedness of all life, as with the Native American spirituality. We can borrow from that and add to it and move forward, you know. But we need to really reacquaint ourselves with nature and this planet. We've lost touch with it, I think. And that's, I think, the simplest solution to this is just simply stop talking and go do it. We know what needs to be done. We just need to find a place to protect and put our energy there.
You know, I think there's a lot of wisdom there. And I think it reflects some of what's been brought up earlier, that we have choices to make. And what is most important is that we take responsibility and we act out of our own humanity, whether it is, as you have so eloquently stated, reconnecting with the natural world, whether it is welcoming, choosing to welcome and demanding that our community welcome the climate refugees that are going to be pouring in, to act out of the kinds of values that will be the structure of the world we're trying to create. And if we all act in that way and make those choices, we can make it happen. If we just sit back and say, oh, well, you know, it's all over, but we can go out and shop and then it will feel a little better and, you know, and life will go on or not. That's what will be destructive. It's breaking out, breaking free, if you will, not only of fossil fuels, but of the culture that is destroying us.
Right. And I've also noted very quickly here, and I'll end, a lot of writers and thinkers about this have commented about how we shouldn't be afraid to take small steps, small individual actions, because those can ripple out, and we need action. We've discussed this thing up and down. I mean, the information is out there. People can dig up the information if they need it. We need to stop talking.
Okay.
And start really walk.
Indeed, and we're talking here, but we're also talking about acting, and people can get involved with Break Free. The website again.
The website's a little long, but if you go to Google and put in Break Free PDX, it will immediately connect you with the website.
Okay, thank you, Charlie, and thank you all other guests. And sorry we didn't get to whoever else wanted to get on. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio. I've been speaking with Loewen Berman with Portland Rising Tide and the coalition that's putting together this ambitious set of actions coming up in a couple weekends. And you can get involved with that. I've mentioned some meetings. We've mentioned some websites. Get involved. Thanks, Loewen.
Thank you.
And we're going to go and hear another piece of a song from the Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir. The Earth Wants You is his new release. It's also a book he had out, and he was in Portland on Sunday. Pretty interesting guy. I'd really recommend checking it out. It's Paul Rowland.
A spell on nature. We'll be Good morning. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. And here's what's coming up on KBOO this morning. First, on Political Perspectives, we hear Radio EcoShock. This week, why knowing more about climate change could help you stall doing anything about it. And an industry insider says recycling is a myth that just postpones the inevitable collapse. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, Flashpoints looks at the classified 28 pages from the 9/11 report, a diversion from real U.S.-Saudi issues. Also, anti-police brutality hunger strikers and their supporters hold a speak-out in front of police headquarters in San Francisco. And at 11 o'clock on the bike show, the guests are Aileen Crotty and Guthrie Straw, who will talk about the upcoming 14th annual Filmed by Bike. It's a film festival featuring the world's best bike movies, May 6th through the 8th at the Hollywood Theater. And thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support in our membership drive, which